Blog Talk Radio.
Richard Allen could not be with us tonight. He sends his regards. And I would like to introduce Steve Harper. He's a graduate of Yale, the ART Institute for Advanced Theater Training at Harvard, and the playwright program at Juilliard. He's actor, director, producer, voiceover artist, creative coach. We have an extensive list of so much that Steve has created and has also been able to share and help others with their work and with their creativity. So I'd like to introduce to all of you our guest for tonight, Steve Harper. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks so much, Tanya Maria.
And it's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's really great to be here. And I'm thrilled. I love hearing you talk about all that stuff that I've done. It sounds really important. Like, wow, who's that?
Oh, you're funny. Well, it's been a long time. You've been a member of the network for so long, and I want to thank Shireen Snow for inviting you. And
yeah,
we've been talking about it for years now.
Yeah, I'm glad it finally worked out, but I'm really glad to be on, and thank you for inviting me, and definitely thanks to Shireen. She's been she's really amazing, and I was actually in a play with her way back in the day, and we really bonded and connected, and I've been following her ever since. We've been following each other, and it's nice to make the connections that you can make when artists get together, so I'm excited about that.
That is awesome. As a matter of fact, she could not be with us tonight. I asked if she could call in and say hi, but she is on her opening night, the play Brownsville Song, B-side for Trey, and the Actors Theater of Louisville, Humana Festival of New
Fantastic.
American Plays. So
Fantastic.
we wish her well. It's her opening night. It's exciting. So, but she said she'll listen to the show through the archives. And
great.
We are on iTunes, so our listeners can always download our shows from blogtalkradio.com/coloredpeople and from iTunes. And before I forget, I want to give out the number for those of you who want to call in and say hi. The number is 949-209-2956. Again, the number is 949-209-2956. And we are going to get started picking Steve's brain here. And the first thing I always ask is, with all this creativity overflowing out of you, we'd like to start from the beginning of your childhood experience, the influences and the inspirations as you were growing up. Share with us, you know, your earliest recollections of your artistic abilities.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm from New York. I was born in Brooklyn and grew up on Long Island, and my parents are both retired teachers. My mother was a guidance counselor at a high school in Brooklyn. My dad was the head of the art department at a middle school in Queens. And there's always been, my father is a visual artist. He's done all sorts of things, paintings and puppetry and cartooning, and he's working on a children's book now. I mean, there are all kinds of things that
That's
he's
awesome.
Always done. Yeah, and my mother's family, side of the family, had a lot of artistry in it. I have an aunt who had been, I think, on the Major Bowes Hour as a singer, and she had actually at one time dated the actor Godfrey Cambridge. Also on my mother's side of the family, the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Charles Fuller, who wrote the Soldier's Play, is one of our relatives. So there's there's always been, I think, this kind of respect for the arts in my family,
right.
And I'm really grateful for that because I know so many artists who grew up in homes where their family was not supportive or not initially
right.
supportive. And I think from very early on, you know, the artists in both my parents were very encouraging. And I used to like write poetry at the dinner table and draw my own comic books and, you know, all sorts of things. But just they were very supportive.
That is
of.
Wonderful.
Yeah, really fun stuff. My brother and I also used to pretend to have our own comedy variety show, like in front of our fireplace. You know? Interviewing imaginary guests and stuff like that.
That's
so.
Fine. Well, that right there tells you pretty much, or at least it's an indication of what you will pursue in life. Because in my case, I went to American school growing up, and I used to line up my dolls, and I used to teach them English. You know, and as a professional, I'm a corporate trainer. You know, I love to teach. I love to educate and train. So,
right.
So I look back at my life and I say, well, there you go. You, as a child, you were teaching your dolls, so this is no, you know, wonder. So tell us about of course, there is a professional career when, of course, you're getting paid for what you're doing, but
right.
tell us
well,
about...
the transition actually came early for me, which I'm also really grateful for because I was, you know, we had moved from Brooklyn to Long Island. I think my parents wanted to have a kind of a better atmosphere for us, I think,
mm-hmm.
rather than the urban sort of state of Brooklyn. And it's a little bit ironic because where we live in Fort Greene is now, like, the place to be. Like, Brooklyn Academy of Music is not far from there. And I think if we had stayed, it wouldn't have been so bad. But but they had wanted us to grow up in a space that was a little bit more user-friendly. And so... And my mother, being a guidance counselor, she had been very specific about where we went to high school. And I went to a Quaker school out on Long Island, basically like 45 minutes from where we lived. And one day, there was a woman in my class. There were a number of us from where I live who would take this 45-minute bus ride over to the other side of the island. And there was one person on that bus who was studying at a performing arts center. And she had, the Performing Arts Center taught musical theater and dance and acting. And they, at the time, and of course I'm going to date myself here, but at the time they were a lot of the kids who were there were also represented by agents and going into Manhattan and auditioning for things. And they were looking for boys because they wanted to have kids audition for the Cosby Show. And they didn't have very many boys who went to the school. So this one day on the bus, this girl said to me, you know, I'm at this Performing Arts Center. Would you be interested in this whole audition for the Cosby Show thing? Because I was doing a lot of the plays in high school. And, I said, sure. And so I went in. I met this Betsy Dickerson, who ran this Dickerson Performing Arts Center, taking classes there in musical theater and dance and acting. And before I knew it, I had an agent, and I was going into the city and auditioning. For all sorts of things.
That's
awesome. So it started before I was out of high school. I was actually going in, with all the professional sort of energy of and fear and challenge of what it means to go in, prepare for audition, go in and roll the dice. Yeah.
That is wonderful. So, okay. Now you mentioned the Cosby Show. I did see a little clip of you with Tempest.
Tempest Bledsoe. Yeah.
How was that experience?
That was super fun. There was a syndicated show called Monsters. This was after I graduated college, and Tempest was on an episode. It's called My Zombie Lover. It was written by a guy named David Mish, who had been a writer for Mork and Mindy back in the day.
Right.
And he wrote this basically this comedic zombie episode. It was an anthology series, like a different monster every week. And I think you can still find it on Amazon or iTunes or Netflix or something. I'm not sure. But but this particular episode was I got cast as this zombie who comes back from the dead to court Tempest because I had fallen in love with her in high school and then gotten into a car accident.
Oh, that's funny.
So, yeah, and it was really terrific actors in it, and a lot of crazy humor, like my ear comes off in the episode. it's just really fun. By the end, Tempest and I are both zombies, and we go off together to the land of the undead. It's craziness. But it was my first job. I was super excited.
Really?
And, of course, yeah, it was my first professional gig. And it was
that
also
awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun. And it was, you know, 3 hours of makeup in the makeup chair every morning. And funny story, I actually remember standing outside the studio at one point just getting some air, and people, a couple of people walking by and, like, thinking I was a burn victim, like, turning away. Crazy zombie makeup.
A burn victim. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, for those of you who want to see a little clip of that and many other clips, you can visit Steve's website, which is Harper Creates. That's H-A-R-P-E-R, Creates, with an S at the end, .com. And you can go to his acting link, and there you will find some very entertaining reels of comedy and all the drama and some of the work that Stephen has done. Again, the number is to call in if you'd like. We'll open the phone lines a little later. It's 949-209-2956. And unfortunately, I am having trouble opening up the chat room, so I apologize for that. For those of you who are wanting to connect through chat, so I guess you're just going to have to call in and say hi. So
call in, say hi.
That's right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Steve Harper, and he is an amazing, talented young man, and I'm looking at All My Children here. You were on All My Children as Rodney. Now, how was your experience at All My Children?
It was, it was kind of great. It was after, I did All My Children after I got out of acting school. So this was many years after the Monsters piece. And I was on All My Children twice. So a recurring role of Rodney, who was an assistant at Tempo Magazine, which was kind of fun. And what I was really struck by in that experience, I mean, some terrific actors. I got to work with Julia Barr and several other people. And what was really fun to me, and also really sort of dug into my theater training, was the sense of, you know, soaps are super fast. You know, you'll rehearse once and then you'll shoot it. Mm-hmm. You know, actually in the case of All My Children, what we did was we would rehearse, and then you'd go through makeup and all that stuff and put your costume on, and then you'd come out to, you know, when they called you to the set, and then you'd shoot it like twice, and then you were done. So there was really no room for, like, not a, you know, rehearsal for theater has a million, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of rehearsal. Rehearsal for TV maybe has, you know, a few minutes of rehearsal and then several takes. But rehearsals for soaps, it all happens in one take or two. And it happens really fast. You got to know what you're doing. You got to sort of hang with it, and you just got to keep going, because that's you're only going to get a couple of chances. But I was really grateful to be able to do that. Super fun.
That is wonderful. Ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking to Steve Harper. We're going to take a little break, and we will be right back. We have music from Janice B, and we will get to that in a little bit. But let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Alphonse Mouzon, drummer, composer, multi-instrumentalist, and CEO and chairman of TenaciousRecords.com. And I'm also a very proud member of ColoredPeople.net.
We're back with Steve Harper. This is Tanya Maria, your host, and the show and the network is sponsored by Zeal for Life Products, natural products. Check out our sponsor, Zeal for Life Products, which helps make all this possible, zealforlifeproducts.com. Steve Harper, all right.
Yeah.
Law and Order.
So exciting to be doing this. I want to say that, you know, part of what I've always been impressed by is that you've got a real coalition of artists that you look back at the iTunes archive, and it's just a lots of people from lots of disciplines really talking about what it's like. And I feel like that's the, you know, in addition to being really proud of the stuff that I've done, I feel like the opportunity is just for people to feel like more and more people, whether they're artists or whether they're not artists, can really use, the opportunity to really understand what it's like, the life of an artist, the challenges of the artist, the triumphs of the artist. I feel like so many artists, what we do is a little bit misunderstood and a little bit sort of in, shrouded in, cultural myths or secrecy, and it's really about hard work and about showing up.
Yes.
It's about, being blessed. It's about leaning into being fortunate and making connections with people and staying friendly and grateful and humble and all those
things,
I think, are really important in keeping a career going.
And also remembering where you came from and those who helped you get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. Some people say, oh, you're so lucky. luck has nothing to do with it. It's like you said, it's hard work. You are rehearsing. You are learning your lines. You are, honing your craft and your... What they see is the end product of a lot of hard work. So,
And there are always. I mean, any time I get cast or anyone gets cast, there is an element of rolling the dice. There are always a ton of people auditioning for any given role, and to this day, I go into the audition rooms and I'm sitting there with 10 other black men my type. Going in to audition for a particular thing, and it's just a matter of who those people on the other end of the camera feel like it might be right for that particular thing. And I also feel like it's about, for me, it's about building community with those other people in the room and not really making it an us versus them, but saying, hey, we're all in this process. I'm really grateful to have the chance to go into the room and audition and do what I do in front of other people at any time. And whatever happens, happens. And whatever happens, I'll be okay on the other end.
Right. And you've done so much, voiceovers, acting, producing, directing, and we'll get to that, your short that you've done and that you wrote, produced, directed. So I'm looking forward to talking about that. I remember thinking it was so cool that you were in Law and Order. Tell us about that experience. I mean, All My Children is one thing. Law and Order is a completely different setup.
Well,
how is that?
I have to say, people sort of joke that most actors in New York had been on one or all of the Law and Orders. kind of a staple, at least present opportunity for us to keep knocking on the door. And I have to say, I auditioned for all of them a bunch of times, and was really grateful that I was on Law and Order Special Victims Unit and Law and Order Criminal Intent, those two, but not the mothership. But it was really fun. I was in an episode called Parasite in 2001, and got to do it to work with Chris Maloney and Mersh Gaharjate, and they were great. But, it's what's really nice is on a show like that where. As I know now from having written for Covert Affairs, a show like that is really, it's a machine, it really just sort of like functions like, everybody kind of knows what they're doing. And it was really nice to be in a scene with those two leads. And it was actually at the end of that particular day of shooting and people were in a really great mood. And we just, they blocked it out. The director, David Platt, blocked it out and we ran through it a couple of times, and they shot it, and they were just so fun to work with. And a really interesting script from a guy named Martin White. Very fun.
Well, let's take a listen to the little clip you sent me.
Okay.
That's Law and Order. We'll be right back.
You know how many microorganisms there are in soil? We test everything. You'll still be getting results 10 years from now.
Yeah, these samples found on what was left of the victim's clothing.
What are those?
Horticulturalists use them to collect and store microscopic pollen. The samples your lab sent us weren't consistent with the plant life in the area.
Okay, well, what did your test show?
I haven't tested them
yet. Well, when are you going to test them?
First thing tomorrow morning.
How about now?
I love that. That is so funny. It's like, how about
that? Yeah, I mean, that. Yeah, I know. How about now? So the that particular episode, the which, you know, is certainly running in reruns, there's a guy who's committed a murder and there are bulls on the victim. And so they're trying to connect him to the victim by testing these plant samples. So I play a forensic geologist, which I had never heard of a forensic geologist before I did this, who basically is the person who helps them connect the dots. Yeah.
Well, if for those of you listening, if you want to see the clip, you can go to, of course, Steve Harper's website, and that is harpercreates.com. But you can also go to coloredpeople.net, our homepage. We have that reel there. And, of course, we also have our blog that we also want to encourage all of you to sign up for. We don't spam you. We just let you know who's coming on the show next. And it's It's rcomagazine.com. It's easier to just go to colorpeople.net and click on blog, Tanya Maria's blog. It's all there. I sometimes can't remember all these websites. So just go to colorpeople.net, and everything is there. Like our Facebook page and, you know, and one-stop shop. Now, that just out of curiosity, when you go to the set, do you just come in, do your part, and leave, or do you hang around and wait for your time? How does that work?
Well, you come in usually several or a little bit of time before. You know, what they do basically is they have people who really smart people who organize the entire day. So you find out through your agent or whoever you're connected to, your manager, you know, through the production company, when you're supposed to be there, your call time, they call it, and then you come in, and it's usually an hour or so before you go on. You'll go at some point to hair and makeup and the wardrobe. Sometimes you'll bring clothes. Sometimes they'll have clothes for you. And sometimes, too, you go a couple of days before that for a costume fitting, and you meet with the wardrobe people, and they say, you know, this is what we bought for you, or they ask you to bring stuff. And then you wait. There's a lot of waiting in the TV and film industry until they're ready. And when they're ready, you have basically a very small rehearsal with whoever the actors are in the scene, with the director of the episode, with, you know, with the camera crew and the sound people so that they know where you're going to stand and all that stuff. They block it out. You talk about the scene. And then they bring in all the other people who need to watch, all the other technicians who, when the cameras are rolling, are doing all sorts of things around you in terms of, you know, the other people who are the grips and the other camera operators and people who are pushing the camera in, if it's a dolly shot or whatever. And then everybody gets to see how it all functions. And then you go away while they set up cameras in that space. So usually you've done all that without any of the camera set up, or they have to lay down dolly tracks to move the camera around or anything like that. They haven't done that at that point. And then you go off to your dressing room or off to the side and you run lines, perhaps with the other actors or perhaps by yourself. And then a few minutes or maybe an hour or however long it takes, you come back and then you do it. And you might get a few adjustments from the director and you might do it again or again and again. And then they'll take it from they'll take it from a couple of different angles depending on depending on how complicated the scene is. And then they say thanks, and you go home. And you also, when you come in, you sign union paperwork to say, you know, you check in like with any job. Say, I'm here, I arrived at this time, and all that stuff. And then you sign out. And that's pretty much the way it works.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
That is awesome. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Steve Harper. And your creative life. He is a director, a voiceover artist, writer, producer, and a creative coach. We're going to get to that. But before we do, let's take a quick break. And we have music by Janice B. And the song I'm going to play is called So Much Love, and it's from her one of her past CDs. We have music from her current CD coming up. But I just love the song so much, I want to play it. And this is Janice B., also a member of the network. Thank you so much, Janice, and we'll be right back.
So much. much love deep inside. Gentle soul,
gentle soul,
touching my.
Janice B, you can check out her website. That's janicebmusic.com. B, just the letter B. Janice B, J-A-N-I. I say that's J-A nice because she's such a nice lady. I know it's corny, but Janice B, the letter B, music.com. Thank you, Janice. Appreciate it. All right, Steve. So how's the weather there? You're in New York right now, right?
Gorgeous. I'm in Los Angeles, and it's
you're in LA. Okay.
I am.
Okay.
Yes, and earlier today it was 80 degrees, so it's just amazing. Actually.
Rub it in.
Sorry.
That's okay. We'll forgive you.
Okay.
All right. It's rainy here in Raleigh, North Carolina, and it's overcast.
Oh, sorry about that.
But and you're 3 hours earlier than me, so anyway.
Right.
Maybe
yeah.
Maybe it will start raining there and get overcast too. No. Just kidding. Okay. Well, let's see here. Now, what was your first voiceover gig?
Wow, what an interesting question. My first voiceover gig. Oh, you know what? Actually, it was I was in college, and I was asked to do a narration for a really dry. I was asked to do a narration for a psychology film.
Okay.
And I can't remember that much about it, but I was an English and theater studies major, so I guess somehow or other I got pointed toward these people, and I did this voiceover for this film. I want to say it was called Blue Balloon, but I'm not really sure if that was true.
Okay.
And it was cool. It was really, I enjoyed the opportunity to do that. And I think, you know, one of the things that I'm really aware of having been to drama school at the ART is, you know, I've done a lot of study of voice and how I can use my voice in dramatic ways and, you know,
right.
to sort of be present with material. So I kind of dug it. I thought, okay, this is a thing. This is a thing that maybe I can do more of. You know, so I've been really
awesome.
Grateful to present a bit more of that.
Now, Betty on the Bed, you wrote, produced, and directed that. That's a short. Tell us
yes.
about that. Was that your very first project that you wrote, directed, and produced?
Yes. The first film that I wrote, produced, and directed. And I did it partly because I had a longer piece, something I'd written as a play that I was going to do as a short film. But that the longer piece was about 40 minutes. And I was told by people who know the film industry that 40 minutes is way too long to be made into a short film. Because partly what happens is films go to, or at least potentially go to festivals. And festivals that program short films like the short films to be really short. You know, so
mm-hmm.
if it's a 10-minute film or a 7-minute film, they can put several of them in an evening. If it's a 40-minute short film, they're not really quite sure what to do with it because it takes up so much real estate. So I thought, okay, well, let me write something and create something for some people I know. I had a friend of mine, the woman who's the lead in Betty on the Bed, Teresa Hedgie, was actually in drama school with me. And I decided that I would write this piece. It's sort of a little supernatural comedy about a group of spirit people who show up to take a woman off to the other side, and the woman
mm-hmm.
is sort of not ready to go,
mm-hmm.
and they're not quite sure what to do about that. So, yeah, it's a 7-minute film. It's on my website and also on YouTube, and I'm really proud of it. Very fun experience.
Good.
Yeah.
Congratulations. How was it being on the other side of the lens as a director?
Well, you know, fascinating. I think one of the things, the big turn for me, because I made Betty on the Bed in 2006, the big turn for me was I hosted a kids show. I moved to Baltimore in the late 90s, and I ended up being one of the co-hosts of a show called the Fox 45 Clubhouse, which was a kids show out of the Fox affiliate. We came on in between the cartoons. And we did puppets, and we made up characters, and we announced
Aww.
Birthdays, and we had a magazine, and we appeared in malls and all this crazy stuff. But the great thing about it was the first time that I got to be not only on camera a host, but I also got to be a co-producer of that show, which meant that we did everything. We wrote stuff. We sometimes, you know, did some editing. We held the camera occasionally. We produced episodes. We called people up and said, why don't we go here or there? So I really got a taste for, you know, I started writing plays somewhere along the line when acting stuff had slowed down, and I just got the sense like, oh, there's all this other stuff to be done in the industry
mm-hmm.
that's still really fun, really connected to the dramatic craft, and why don't I do more of that? Like, there's a real opportunity here to sort of see what else I can do. And I think, you know, one of the things that, and we'll certainly talk about this when we talk about the coaching piece, is I'm really about encouraging people to be fully self-expressed, you know, and there are all, I know a ton of actors who have spent some time saying, gee, I wish I had this kind of role to do, or I wish I had this kind of opportunity to do, and one of my philosophies is, you know, it's we're in an age now where people can create their own opportunities. People are creating
right.
web series. People
That's
are creating
right.
all sorts of stuff. And real regular series are coming out of Twitter feeds. They're coming out of short stories. They're coming out of comic books. You know, I'm really a champion for people taking their own kind of creative license and kind of exploding what they're able to do and inviting their friends in and, you know, and doing it the right way, not in a sort of a floppy way, but a really sort of clear, deliberate way with, you know, I had contracts on my film. I had this sort of deal memo, even for people I wasn't paying, which basically said, here's what's happening here. You know, here's what you're doing. Here's the credit you get for it. Here's the, you know, and I had to put up a bond with New York State, and I hired my camera crew, and I hired my makeup artist. You know, it's very, like being a little, having a little business. And I think that is the notion of stepping into that space as opposed to, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but as an actor, as actors, we're trained, I think, to basically say, to basically have our hands out and say, okay, I'm ready for the part. Please give it to me. And I think that we're, there's another opportunity for us to actually
right.
create work and step into it. And then I think the whole industry changes around us when we do that. People begin to respond differently to us when we bring other things to the table.
Yes,
yeah.
Now speaking of voiceovers, Chico and Rita, or Chico y Rita, like we say in Portuguese.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, this is a celebrating music and culture of Cuba, with a love story. I love the animation on this, and you did a wonderful
beautiful.
Job with voiceover. And it was nominated for an award. And
it was a big award. Chico and Rita came out in 2010, and I had, by the time it came out, I had moved, by the time it came out in the United States, I had moved to Los Angeles from New York. And the story behind this, for me, my own personal involvement, and, you know, just to be clear, the award you're talking about, it was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Animated Film in 2010, which is just mind-blowingly delightful. And I'd been working since I got out of drama school with a commercial agent, really terrific commercial agent, and they had a voiceover department, and I started doing some stuff, auditioning for things through the voiceover department. And this just sort of came up as an opportunity for me to audition, and I auditioned, and I booked it. And what was really interesting is Chico and Rita, which is really a lovely film. The animation is terrific.
Yes.
You know, Javier Mariscal directed it, Fernando Trueba, and Tono Arondo. And it's just, you know, it's this love story between this singer and a composer and musician. And it's almost entirely in Spanish. So the English-speaking parts are, you know, at some point, they come from Cuba to the United States, and they're in the United States for a very short portion of the film. And they basically got all these actors to do a bunch of voices for the portion of the film when they're in New York. And I was really grateful to be able to do that. A very playful, very quick session, you know, where they're sort of, they told us to do stuff. And I didn't get to see the script. I just got to see the lines, these particular lines. And they would say, well, try it this way or try it that way. And you didn't get to see any of the film. You know, I understand on a lot of other animated films, you actually get to see the footage and while you're speaking. But this is it's really sort of shoestring and very, very quick. So by the time it was nominated for the Academy Award, I was already, you know, I was living in another state. I was, you know, writing on Covert Affairs. I was in the writer's room when I saw on one of the trade papers that was nominated for Academy Award. I thought, my goodness.
That's awesome.
That's, you know, I'd forgotten all about it, and here it is. Yeah. Terrific film.
Well,
terrific film.
Let's listen to a quick clip. Tell us about your character on this clip.
Okay, so in this clip, I'm actually a couple of different voices, but there's one main voice toward the end of the clip. Basically, Chico is in, it takes place at the Village Vanguard, I believe, in the village, and the movie, I think, takes place in the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, so Chico is on stage playing music in a combo, and Rita, who, you know, they've been dating and they're a little bit estranged, they haven't seen each other for a while, she comes to see him. So you sort of hear her coming into the room and somebody saying, oh, let me give you a seat. That's actually also me. And then at the very end of the clip, there's a guy who's on stage, has been playing the saxophone, who announces the next song in honor of Rita, because this has been composed by Chico in honor of her, and that voice is also me.
That is awesome. Let's take a listen. Chico and Rita.
Thank you. Thanks.
Wow, she's even hotter in person.
What is this?
Ballad written by that guy seated right over there, Lily. But today, we're going to dedicate it to a lady who's with us here tonight, great artist, Rita LaBelle.
Steve Harper, ladies and gentlemen. Congratulations, Steve. You've done so much, and we haven't even talked about half of it yet, Dort.
I think we probably have talked about half.
That is awesome.
But thank you.
Young and the Restless, 90210. That is so awesome. Now, Covert Affairs. Let's talk about Covert Affairs here for a second. But before we do, there's Wagon Wheel. Wait a minute, Wagon Wheel. I just love that story. You narrated the entire book?
Yes. Wagon Wheels is it's a children's book by a woman named Barbara Brenner, and it was first published in 1993. And then there was, I think at the time when it first came out, there was one audio version, but we did another one in 2010. It was really fortunate. I mean, again, like, you know, I was talking earlier about connections and staying close to the people you work with, and it was a woman producer and director named Robin Miles, who I went to college with, who does a lot of voiceovers. She's actually an award-winning audiobook narrator and producer, and we reconnected, and she brought me in on this project, and it's basically about a black family making their way west. There's a dad and two kids, and this is, I believe, after the Civil War. And they're, you know, it's a children's book, so it's basically told from the point of view of one of the children about this journey to the West.
Right.
And I got to do all the voices, so super fun.
That is awesome. We're going to listen to a little clip. I was reading through, and it's the Moldy Boys, right.
Yeah,
three boys
right.
make that 150-mile journey to find their father, and it takes place in 1878 during the Homestead Act, where black families left the South to settle the West. And I
right.
thought that was it's definitely a must have and a must read and a must share with our children.
It's a beautiful
book.
Terrific illustrations from a guy named Don Bolognese. And it's a great story, dramatically told and kid-friendly. So, well, you can't beat that.
Yes. Yes. You sent me the clip. I took a little piece of it. And
yeah, sure.
I want to share with our listeners. So this is Wagon Wheel. You can find it on Amazon.com. And this is narrated by yours truly, Steve Harper. We'll be right back.
Wagon Wheels by Barbara Brenner. Pictures by Don Bolognese. Read by Stephen Michael Harper. There go the Moldy Boys. One day, we were picking berries near the river. Willie said, "Johnny, I smell smoke." We looked up. The whole sky was orange. We heard someone shout,
"Prairie fire!"
We saw the fire behind us. It was coming fast. "We will be burned up," Willie cried. "There's no place to run." I saw a deer running toward the river. "Quick," I told Willie, "run to the river." We ran, pulling the wagon behind us. People from Nicodemus were running with us now. When we got to the water, I told Willie, "Jump in. Hold the wagon. I will hold little brother." Everyone was jumping in around us. Mr. Hickman helped me hold little brother, and Mr. Hill helped Willie with the wagon. There was fire and smoke all around, but the water kept the fire from us. We stayed there for a long time. When the fire had died out, we all walked home.
Hi, I'm Harry Elston with the Friends of Distinction, and you are listening to ColoredPeople.net with your host, Tanya Marie.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Tanya Maria, your host at ColorPeople.net, and Richard Allen could not be with us tonight. And we are with our special guest, Steve Harper. That was so much fun listening to the entire clip that you sent me, and I just picked that little piece, Steve. Mm-hmm. That, lovely. Love that book. Congratulations.
Thanks. Yes.
It's wonderful.
It's terrific material. Very happy to be part of that. Yeah, I think there's always something for me that's really interesting about, you know, the Moldy Boy story. Is it's a true story. It's based on, you know, the real thing that happened. So there's something very exciting about connecting to real historical stuff.
Yes,
you know, that's
to be able to do the
special.
Entire book.
Yeah.
To narrate the entire book, that's awesome.
Yeah, really fun.
All right, Covert Affairs. This is recent, 2013. Not only have you written a couple of episodes, I believe, but you also were story editor for 16 episodes.
Yes.
And tell us about your experience with Covert Affairs.
Fascinating. Well, you know, I had I'd gone to playwriting school somewhere around after hosting the kids show and doing a lot of my own playwriting. I really wanted to move into the writing space and, again, expand the work that I was doing in different creative directions. So I went to playwriting school, and got so fortunate to get into Juilliard and study with Chris Durang and Marcia Norman, who are really generous and amazing in addition to being, like, really famous and talented people. And when I got out of school, I managed to get an agent, and then was coming back and forth to L.A. to take meetings, and eventually, you know, moved out to L.A. Specifically to pursue television writing work, and was really not sure how to do it. You know, the first year I came out to L.A., and I didn't have very many meetings, so so it took me a while to kind of get my feet under me. But then I was in something called the CBS Writers Mentoring Program, which taught me a lot.
Wonderful.
About how to basically how to take meetings, how to research television projects, and also how to tell my story. You know, that's really the big thing I think about taking meetings in Hollywood, is that people want to know very quickly who you are. And so the notion
right.
of being able to talk very specifically, you know, I started talking about myself as a, you know, native New Yorker and recovering kids show host, you know, and I also... And I also started telling stories. One of the stories I tell in meetings quite often is, you know, I grew up, my father is what I consider a major Catholic, believes in all the books of the Catholic Church. My mother believes in all the books of the horror section of the bookstore. So I grew up, you know, I would go to Catholic school, and then I would come home and say, "Well, Mom, what's going on in Salem's Lot?" You know, and she would fill me in. And So consequently, all of my plays are really about invisible stuff, like what happens, what's happening sort of outside of the normal realm of the world that is actually real and that actually affects people. And, you know, sometimes that's spiritual stuff, and sometimes that's stuff about culture or sexuality or race, or, you know, those are the things that all of my plays are about. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so I came out to L.A., you know, with my plays, already having an agent and a manager, you know, went through the CBS program, learned how to take these meetings, took a series of meetings, and ended up really connecting with the guys at Covert Affairs. We had a terrific conversation about the show. And, you know, the show is still on the air. It's going on in its fifth season. I was on seasons 3 and 4 and got to write 2 episodes, the CIA spy drama about Annie Walker, who was basically trying to make the world a better place, and you know, sort of doing that one CIA case at a time. And so I wrote 2 episodes, the first of which was called Hello, Stranger, where Annie goes to try to turn a foreign diplomat, who's actually the assistant to the prime minister of Yemen, in the episode, although it started out as Syria, and we ended up changing that because things were getting really crazy in Syria. But yeah, it was really fun to both work on it, write it, and then go out to Toronto where they shoot, be on set to work with the actors, work with the director. You know, we have an episode named Elodie Keene, who's a, you know, her stuff goes back to like law, LA Law. Mm-hmm. She's really smart. And so I learned a lot working on Covert Affairs. Yeah.
Now, how much creative independence do you have for writing for Covert Affairs? These 2 episodes, were you told exactly what the story was? I mean, tell us the creative process on those 2 episodes.
Well, part of my thought is, well, how much time you got? the truth is that there's one of the great things about television writing is that it really sort of solves the issue of writing as such a solitary piece. So this is collaborative writing. This is group writing. This is like an opportunity to be on a team that figures out, and in the case of Covert Affairs anyway, that figures out together what the storylines are going to be and how the episodes are going to flow. And so that there were 9 of us on staff. We would, what we call, break a story together in the room over however long it would take, ideally a week, but sometimes longer. The script would be assigned, and one of us would then go off with the outline that we broke as a group and turn that into a 10 to 12 page outline that then gets approved, that then gets turned into a 50 page script. And those 2 parts, the outline and the script, are what primarily the writer does on an individual basis. And of course, you know, since it's a team process, the script might come back around and other people might add to it, or certainly the creators and Matt Corman and Chris Ord, you know, would take a pass at the script and sort of fix this and that, or change things or shorten things or tighten things in a way that the whole trick of television is really to mimic the voice of the creator, you know, because they create the show and the characters and the energy, and we're really there to help them support their vision of the show. So, of course, that's part of what happens. So it's always a group process.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. We will listen to a little clip on Covert Affairs. This was the episode you wrote, Hello, Stranger. And we'll be right back.
I've been looking forward to meeting you. Forgive me, we don't have a lot of time.
It's a match. Unbelievable. The CIA can't even let a sick man see a doctor.
We're welcoming to see the best doctor in the world.
At tremendous cost.
We're just having a conversation.
Conversations with the CIA are never free.
We haven't demanded anything. The CIA and the State Department are 2 separate things.
That's a distinction you like to make, isn't it?
I don't know which operatives you've met in the past, but I'm not them.
No, you're blonde. Perhaps someone now thinks that's my type.
There's no agency plot here, Mr. Almogri. We have things in common, and so I came to see you on my own terms.
The only thing worse than a CIA operative? Is a CIA operative with a personal agenda.
We have a shared agenda. The distance between villages is short. You wrote that, and I believe it, that we're all related.
I didn't write that, but okay. We're great friends. Great friends who pounce on each other in moments of crisis. The man who I've sworn to serve faithfully is fighting for his life downstairs, and you see that as a political opportunity.
I see this as the only opportunity to speak with you, to convince you that we have a chance to change things.
Spoken like an American. All promise and hope, no regard for risk.
We're both at risk here.
No. I am the one standing in a hostile nation under careful watch.
I have traveled far and fought hard to stand here with you.
Kate, I don't even know your name. You know everything about me. I'm exposed and vulnerable while you remain anonymous and protected. How can you have a conversation with me and hide your identity at the same time? How can I connect with you?
Hey there. This is Big Trigger, the host and producer of Spotlight on Jazz and Poetry. And you are currently listening to ColorPeople.net, a multicultural artistic network.
We're back with Steve Harper. Your Creative Life. This is Tanya Maria, your host. And, you know, I want to thank all of our listeners and all of our members, everybody that has made all of this possible. You know, this is a vision to bring color to the world through music, through all forms of art. And this show is very dear to my heart, and this network is very dear to my heart. And, Steve, I really thank you for being part of this vision and for being...
You're welcome. I'm thrilled to be here.
Thank you.
I wanted to mention, since we had played the clip from Covert Affairs, that was Omid Abtahi playing Saeed and our lead, Piper Perabo, playing Annie in that scene. And they really dug into each other on camera. Really, really fun to watch them work.
Is there a show that you would like to write for?
Well, you know, we're looking around, my agent manager and I, and we're about to go into staffing season for the new network shows, and there's a lot of stuff happening cable-wise and taking meetings and sending my material out. There are a number of shows that I'm looking to check out, and I really love shows that sort of put people and character stuff front and center, so... we're looking at a bunch of different things, and hopefully before long there'll be something that emerges as a connection, but we'll see.
That's awesome. You were given an advice by James Baldwin to go the distance, and you took that to heart, haven't you?
I did. That was when I was in college, and he came to, he did a production of The Amen Corner, his play, and he got a chance to meet with the cast and talk to us one-on-one, and I told him that I wanted to be an actor, which is what my main focus was at the time, and he asked me if I really wanted it, and I said yes, and he said, go the distance, and wrote that on my script, and I think about that all the time, and partly the reason I think about it all the time is not because I made a great connection with him, because I don't think I did, but because I really get that, you know, I really felt blessed by his presence. And what I get by that is that we, all of us, I think, have the opportunity to do that, to return that kind of favor, to really sort of be resources for each other, whether we're artists or whether we're teachers or whether we're computer scientists. You know, it's really about passing on the knowledge and the gifts. And that actually, you know, leads directly to the creativity coaching that I do, which is really about, you know, I went to all these fantastic schools, which I'm really fortunate to have gone to.
Yes.
And yet what I learned in those schools was how to do the craft of what I do, but not necessarily how to live the life of a person who does that craft. You know, how do you survive in between gigs, and how do you motivate yourself to create your own work, and how do you stay focused and joyful, and how do you stay positive, and how do you create community, and all of those things are the kind of, it's the work that I do with other artists as a creativity coach, is inspire them to find their own methodology for living their creative life and being as large and self-expressed as they can be as a creative person.
Yes. Yes, indeed. We're going to take a break and listen to Janice B in collaboration with Queen B. This is called Again. And when we get back, we will talk about your creative life, where Steve Harper helps other creative minds get into that place where they need to be to bring out their or birth their vision. So we will be right back, and we will listen to Janice B. again.
Never too late is it to be born again. We evolve, transcend. We arise from the ashes, begin again, again.
If I could feel like water,
feel
every moment.
Pressure came to take over, I'd break into the lake, kept me safe, or if took me away, or the rain washed it all away. Always and ever change. Welcome in clouds of gray. If I could feel like water, I'd never be afraid to cry again. Never too late is it to be born again. We evolve, transcend. We arise from the ashes, begin again, again. The walls around my heart are of my own design. Took each stone thrown at me and stacked them way up high. They cut my skin, but I don't let them in. So I pray that if I could knock them down to pave a path that leads me away from the pain, will I find my way? Mountain to the sky, spread my wings and fly. If I could build a mountain, I'd never be afraid to fly again. We endure, we send. Never too late is it to be born again. We evolve, transcend. We arise from the ashes, begin again, again, again. Thank you.
what's holding you back. Brainstorm to discover your options. Choose your ideal outcome. Map out a solid plan for your project. Execute the plan to get your work done and give your artistic project life. Steve Harper, your creative life. Tell us, how did you get this project off the ground and the vision behind it?
Yeah, well, I'm so excited to be talking about it because, you know, as I said, I learned how to do all these artistic things, but not how to live the life to be the artist who does all this stuff. So how do you survive in between? How do you motivate yourself? How do you stay positive and focused? How do you build community? How do you break the isolation? All of those things. I remember, I think it was 2007, a friend of mine had introduced me to a book by a guy named Eric Maisel called Coaching the Artist Within. It's a really terrific book. I'm looking at it on my bookshelf right now. And it's basically, Eric is a PhD and a writer, and he's basically the founder of the term creativity coaching. And he wrote this book, which has three parts to it. There are parts that are sort of a look at his own coaching practice. So he sort of, you know, has a bunch of chapters that, you know, start out with, you know, so I was talking to this musician, you know, and then he talks about his own writing discipline, and then he has exercises for all of us reading the book. And his philosophy is, which I firmly believe, is that we're all self-coaches. We're all counseling ourselves, cheering ourselves on some level all the time. And the only question is, are we doing it well? Are we doing it well enough? And when we're not doing it well enough, then there's an opportunity to find somebody else to help us to ride shotgun on our process so that we can have our process be what we want it to be. And so I was really taken by this book. And toward the end of the book, he has the opportunity for at least at the time, I don't know if he's still doing this, for free coaching with some of his students. So you could sign up to be coached by one of his students, or you could sign up to study with him. And I thought, wow, what a great opportunity. And I signed up, got in his class, and his classes, he teaches two classes in the curriculum. He teaches a lot of things in a lot of places, but he teaches two classes in the curriculum of the Creativity Coaching Association, which is an institution that basically certifies people to coach other creative people. And so once I was on the path working with Eric, I just kept going and taking all the classes and getting a lot out of it myself. And from the first class, I started working with clients, first by email and then on the phone and sometimes in person. And my focus these days is to work with specifically actors who are interested in moving into the writing space, because that's been such a transformative space for me. And I really feel like there's a way in which there are so many people out there who say, I just want to change the paradigm. You know, I just want to stop waiting for work, and I want to put myself to work, and I want to, you know, create the kinds of work that I want to see rather than waiting for other people to do it. And I want to make my own web series or write my own play or write my own solo show. Or, you know, I feel like there's such benefit to moving into that writing space, no matter what the form is, because it really gives actors we've been taught to be interpretive artists, gives us a kind of agency and a kind of creative energy that is like nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I do, and it's fun. It's really
so
exciting.
So somebody calls you and they need help because they got this block. They don't know where to go, what to do, but they have this project that they want to birth. And so you work one-on-one with that person. Is it like weeks and weeks, and what is the process? Share with us.
Yes.
Like, for instance, with
sure.
The Pepper Project,
right?
The testimonial that we had that you helped. Tell us.
Yeah. So Karis Butsek is a client of mine who I've been working with for quite some time, and we've been working through email coaching, which is slightly different from what I do on the phone with people. But essentially, the process is the same, and there are five steps, which you talked about when you read those things at the beginning of when we just came back from the break. So the five steps are assess. So it's always about checking out, where am I in my process? What do I want? How's it going? How's it not going? What do I wish was better, or what's fantastic? Then there's brainstorm, which is the brainstorming piece is, how would I really like it to be? Like if I were to choose from all the things that I do or all the possibilities, what are those things that make whatever I want to do really juicy? You know, then we talk about that choice, zero in on we're going to do this kind of thing in this way at this time. You know, and for Karis, it was she wanted to do this web series, which is the Pepper Project, which is a CIA drama of her own. And we started talking about that. What does that look like? And who does she need on her team? And, you know, how can she find those people in New York City where she is? And does she need to raise money? Or how does she create the script? Or what are those things that are her goals? And once we planned those out very specifically, you know, it was about creating a crew. It was about creating a script. It was about beginning to have conversations with people to enroll them in her process. You know, that's the mapping part. Part where we map out what it sort of looks like to move through that process, and then it's all about execution. So once we go through those steps, what I do is in the email process we email. It's a 2-month process, and we email as much as the person wants to email me back and forth. I respond to them twice a week with answering their questions and giving more sort of juicy questions. We always start with some sort of assessment where the person writes down what it is they're looking to do. And in the phone Skype piece, what we do is, you know, we talk once a week. And I do a lot of listening and writing down stuff. And as people, basically I'm riding shotgun in their process. So as they say, I'm really interested in blah, 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 I put that down in the list and I create a checklist. And at the very end of the session, I say, here's what I heard you're really interested in doing going forward. You're interested in these 5 things. And, you know, tell me if that's true or if I left out anything or if there's stuff that's not on here that you'd rather have. And then once they agree to that list, I email them the list. They go through their week executing as they go. And then they send me a form just before we meet again saying, here's how the week went. Here's what I did. Here's what I didn't do. Here's what came up. Here's what was scary. And then we do it all over again. We have a phone conversation, and we look at those things. We assess again and say, how did it go and what could be different? And we start the process again. And it's really a space of being accountable, being clear, and, you know, really getting the sense of not what the theoretical process is, but what's your particular process as an artist. You know, you might want to work, you know, all day on Sunday for 10 hours, and that's the time that you have. Or you might want to work 5 minutes a day for 7 days a week, or you might want to work 3 hours on a Tuesday and 3 hours on a Thursday. So it's really about tailoring the process and sort of being there to cheer them on in the process and bringing my own experience and, you know, whatever my particular process has been to bear as suggestions. Like, you might try this, or I've heard people do this, or this works for me. And I think ultimately the goal is to get to a point after, you know, a couple of months or however long it takes where the person is able to self-coach, where the person is able to bring in, loop in their friends so that they create an accountability circle for themselves, so they get used to what their process is. And then they're on their way to continuing to create the work they want to create in the world.
What are some of the techniques you use to help that person? Because the beginning stages is just a ball of confusion. You know, they don't know what direction to take. I know you have tapes that you give them. You help them with relaxation and meditation. But aside from that, what do you do in particular to help them break away from that?
Yeah, there are all sorts of things. I mean, as you mentioned, just for clarity for the audience, I have a meditation and planning CD that I sell and also that I give out sometimes as an offering. But in terms of the bottom line, sort of on the ground stuff, you know, I think it all begins with what do you want to do? You know, to get really specific. I mean, some people say, you know, I have all these ideas. And I always really encourage people who have all these ideas to pick one. You got to start with one.
Right.
And then is that idea a short story? Or is it a short play? Or is it a screenplay? Or is it a full-length play? Or is it a TV pilot? You know, or is it a comic book series? Like, to get really specific, like, what is it that you want to do? And then once we know what that is, we say, okay, it's a short play. Then the question is, you know, how do you want to work on this short play? You know, do you want to work on it in a class with other people? Do you want to work on it by yourself? Do you know how to outline a short play? Are you ready to do that? Are you ready to jump into that? Do you need to do some research?
That's pretty awesome.
Do we want to, you know, it's like every little, nothing is taken for granted. You know, it's like like when we go, when we do this with other things in our lives, we go to the grocery store. We don't just go and say, I want food, you know, exactly what food we want, you know, and we know which grocery store, and we know how much time we have and what our budget is, you know, and it's really about that and chipping away.
Right.
I think one of the things, I'll just say this, and, you know, I think one of the things that is, goes to sort of the myth of the culture of creativity is, you know, we hear a lot of stuff about completed projects. Oh, this movie's coming out, this TV show, so-and-so wrote this book. But we hear very little about how they wrote the book. Like, how long did it take them? Did they do an hour a day? Did they do 5 minutes a day? Did they work three times a week? Did they have, you know, somebody who helped them? Did they have people to read drafts? Like, we never culturally get to that nitty-gritty. And that's the space that I get to with my clients, to really say, incrementally, what's going to work for you? And how are you going to know that you showed up in that space? You know, are, do you want to put check marks on a calendar? Do you want to, you know, do you want to use an Excel spreadsheet where you can put in, like, just like a timesheet at work? I did this many hours today. I did this many hours tomorrow. Like, how are you going to do that incremental piece and really give yourself the best chance to succeed by creating a gentle, loving, step-by-step process? Because that, for me, that's what works.
Wonderful. Yeah. Now, are you going to write a book? Do you have plans in the future to have somebody pick up one of your books and be inspired and transform their life?
I do have plans for the future to do that. And it's so interesting that you say that, because that has been something that I've been really interested in for a long time. And in fact, another fellow coach of mine, really brilliant woman named Samantha Bennett, just came out with a book called Get It Done, which is her signature program, which is also a terrific book to go out and get. But I am very interested in taking my methods and putting them into a book somewhere down the line. At the present time, I've got a couple of writing projects I'm doing. I'm working on a web series idea. I'm having a couple of readings of some plays of mine. One on April 28th at the Classical Theater of Harlem in New York. There's going to be a reading of a play of mine. And then there's going to be another reading of a different play at Malibu Playhouse here in California on May 12th. So I've got lots of writing projects sitting directly in front of me before I get to my book project, which hopefully will happen down the line.
That's wonderful. And you tweeted on March 5th, while you were talking, I was looking for it, I retweeted that. You said, no one can do what you can do, but if you don't have time to do it, you won't know what you can do.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that I do a lot of tweeting, and I love the notion of, you know, if I'm not in the process of being directly working with a client on a given moment, it's really nice for me to be able to put little bits like that that are helpful wisdom for my own creative process out there so that people can read them.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to follow Steve on Twitter, his name is Your Creative, like television, Life, LIFE. So that's his Twitter name, Your Creative Life. And, of course, his website is, let me go back there. There's
yourcreativelife.com.
And
there's HarperCreates.com.
HarperCreates.com. And, of course, once you go there, you have all access. It's been wonderful talking to you, Steve.
So great. Such a pleasure, Tanya Maria. Thank you so much for the time and the energy and the great questions and your generosity and and also your continued nurturance of the colored people community. It's great. It's really super instructive what you do, and I'm really happy to be part of it.
Thank you, and we're happy to have you. We're very proud of your creative history, everything you've done, everything that's yet to come. So I'd like to thank all our listeners and supporters, all our members. This is just the beginning. We're just, you know, just it takes time, it takes dedication, it takes effort, it takes not allowing yourself to be discouraged, even though those days come, but you just shake it off and you move on, because, you know, it's not the no that we're looking for, it's that yes that we're looking for, and those that are meant to be there will be there,
yes.
And those that are not meant to be there will not, and that's okay.
Right, yes, and I affirm, and right in line with what you're saying, I feel like no matter what's happening, in the deepest, darkest times, I feel like there's always something to be grateful for, always. And if we can just find those things and continue to build those lists of things that we can be grateful for, I really feel like that helps us chart a path to higher and higher, more positive thoughts about what it is we're doing on the planet and with each other and with the world.
That's right. That's wonderful. Steve Harper, thank you so much for your time. I'd like you to share your closing thoughts, anything you'd like to share, any upcoming events or with your creative life, workshops, and just what would you like to share with us in closing?
Yeah, so in closing, your creative life, I really support people in checking out. There are a ton of articles on the site in the blog section, and there's an e-blast that comes out every month that has helpful and interesting tips about moving through your own creative process. April 28th, Classical Theater of Harlem, a reading of my play in progress, Princeton Theory, which is partly about Paul Robeson and Albert Einstein. And May 12th at Malibu Playhouse, a reading of my play Urban Rabbit Chronicles, which is sort of a fable about creativity and morality. And that's the stuff that's happening. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Yes. Yes, and we didn't even talk about all the plays that you've been in and that you've been involved in, but we have all that on your website, and we have all that on colorpeople.net. You can check out our blog and stay connected, stay in touch with all of our artists and with our network. And Steve, again, thank you so much for your time, and Shireen, when you listen to this broadcast, thank you for introducing Steve to our family, and wishing you both all the best, and the best is yet to come, and we look forward to having you back.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. My pleasure. Thank you all. Thank you, Janice, for your music, and may you all have a blessed night. Good night, Steve. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
There's a light, fills me up inside, shining through my eyes, guiding me toward my dreams. I will try to put the past aside, let go of my pride, and walk the path that's calling me. If I don't find a way to make a change, at the end of the day, there's only me to blame.
Live my life, and I will fly. Heed the lesson, keep the blessing, leave the rest behind. It's my dream, and I design where the journey's gonna take me in my time. 'Cause it's my life.
I can see where I want to be, learning what I need. Take me higher than the sky. I am free to reach my destiny. Bring out the best in me. Take the world and make it mine. Searching for the signs along the way. And I'm gonna rise no matter what they say.
Live my life and I will fly. Heed the
lesson, keep the blessing, leave the rest behind. It's my dream, and I design where the journey's gonna take me in my time. Cause it's my life, and I will fly. Heed the lesson, keep the blessing, leave the rest behind. It's my dream, and I design where the journey's gonna take me in my time. By the light that I'm feeling inside, watch me fly. Cause it's my life, and I will fly. Heed the lesson, keep the blessing, leave the rest behind. It's my dream, and I desire